One Man Revolution, Volume 3, Episode 2. It's me, the Revolutionary, and I am broadcasting live on Facebook and podcasting directly to you inside your headphones right now. Joining me is, of course, the comrade.
Week 2 this time. Hopefully we'll do a little bit better.
There we go. That was fine last week. I think we got some good feedback from different people. We are, as I said, doing this live for, I guess, the first time. I've never actually played with Facebook Live before. So if you had the opportunity to play on Facebook Live, I really appreciate you tuning in and watching us do what we do. All right, so lot going on today, isn't there?
I honestly, it's impossible to know where to start. You just kind of have to roll the dice and pick something.
Let's see. This week had confirmation hearings, cabinet confirmation hearings. We had different questions about Russian interference. We had different misfires, of course, by our illustrious President Deflect. So we will have to find out where we'll start from there. So spin the wheel and pick a topic.
I like the idea of the cabinet for its long-term effects on our day-to-day life, I think.
Oh, so you actually think that these people who are in the cabinet make a difference in our daily lives?
Well, even if they don't, if we don't have a cabinet for a week or two, we could be in trouble as well.
Okay, so let's start with the cabinet appointees. There are a couple of them that went on, and I thought it was very clever of President Deflect Trump to create three separate confirmation hearings occurring at the exact time that his press conference was going on.
His first one in 167 days.
Yeah, that's the least amount of time he spent speaking to the American public ever since he was duly elected.
We'll go with duly elected.
We'll go with duly elected by the, what is that thing? The Electoral College. Yeah, by those people. So he put forward those, you know, what was it, 4, 5, 12 million cabinet appointees.
I think he was just drawing names out of a hat at one point. He was just like, I know these, oh, that's a name I recognize. We'll go with that guy.
Hey, here's a guy who looks urban. Let's put him under housing and urban development. I know, it sounds horrible, but everyone's thinking it. I mean, really. So why don't we take some of the ones that we haven't heard too much about on a lot of the media attention.
Yeah, well, I'm really interested in Betsy DeVos and what she has to do and say about teaching our youth and educating the next generation of American voters.
Well, I mean, I've heard that she is a big proponent in education. She really does. She enjoys education a lot.
The privatization of it, maybe.
Well, privatization. What is privatization, really? I mean, wouldn't our schools be better off run by business people?
Less regulation. More profit margin?
Yeah. It would make much more sense if we did it that way.
Yeah, I could see that going well. I certainly don't think it would ever cut out of operating costs with things like textbooks and, you know, resources and good food for our children.
Well, I mean, she's a 59-year-old philanthropist, Elizabeth Betsy DeVos. You always know when it's an old white lady when she has a name.
A name.
In quotes.
Yes.
You know, Buffy, Mitzi, Bitsy, but it has to have an E in it, right?
It always sounds sassy.
Yeah.
From the get-go.
Yeah, she has to be kind of sassy. So Betsy DeVos, she's, of course, the daughter of billionaire industrialist Edgar Prince. Founder of the auto parts supplier, the Prince Corporation. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the co-founder of the Dick and Betsy DeVos Family Foundation. Sounds good, right?
Yeah, that sounds really good. I mean, I'm sure they've done loads of good things for us.
Uh-huh. I mean, I'm just going to keep reading her accolades.
Yeah.
It's the easiest way to do it because, I mean, obviously she is very, very
qualified.
That's the word you're looking for. Qualified. I was looking for it. I'm still looking for it. I'm sure the committee is looking for it.
We'll find it somewhere.
Director of the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. And she's been the chairwoman of the Windquist Group, which invests in technology and clean energy. Since 1989.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, clean energy, that's exactly what you need.
Clean coal.
As a proponent of education, right?
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense to me. That's where I would think that it should be. And she's been an activist for a long time, and she has done things in states that need the help, like Michigan. Has she? She has. I mean, she helped be one of the architects of the much discussed and, well, much criticized charter school system.
Right, right. Well, she is a huge proponent of the choice of how you educate your child, which I have to personally say I'm a fan of, giving your child the option of picking the education style that best fits them. But I guess the question becomes, is there any oversight, and are we substituting support for our public schools to allow parents to have that choice?
Well, a lot of the times, from what I've been experienced, I've been in education for a long time. Started out when I was like 18 years old. Our family bought a school. It was a daycare that we turned into a Montessori school.
Hmm.
And education is very interesting, and it currently was a little while ago, a McKay Scholarship School here in the state of Florida, which is a charter school.
Mm-hmm.
And that scholarship school gave money, or got money, from the state of Florida to help educate the students that had special needs. So charter schools have their place, and there's no problem with it, but I find that a lot of our charter schools in this country, in places unlike Florida, I mean, Florida has its own charter schools that do this too, tend to break along lines of where they try and use education not to give more knowledge to people, but to give specific types of knowledge to people. Religious schools.
I was going to say, you're very slowly getting to the religious school. I feel like that's a two-edged sword. I don't disagree with you. I feel like a religious education has a lot of its own issues.
Well, I had a classical education in public school. I mean, I studied Latin and Greek, and spent my time learning about the classics and art and Renaissance and all that great stuff.
Right.
But I didn't get any of the reading of the Bible only in Latin.
Right, or the required Sunday school classes.
Yeah. Right, right.
I think the struggle there becomes religious-based private schools probably have an easier time finding funding.
They do.
Than your classic private school. I also have heard a lot of issues with paying teachers for private schools as well. Like, from what I remember reading, they get paid less.
They tend to get paid a little bit less, but in some cases.
Mm.
Now, in other cases, they do because it is well-funded.
Right.
They want to attract the best teachers, in big quotes.
Okay.
So they'll pay them a little bit more money in order to attract them there. But they're given more responsibility.
That goes with the territory, I suppose.
So she really is, I mean, she looks at traditional public education as a dead end. That's a quote from her.
Yeah.
She says that traditional public education is a dead end.
That's good.
And so she thinks that the best thing to do would be to privatize the schools and basically make the students have better basic needs. That's what the idea she's always had. Give them better basic needs. Fulfill better basic needs.
Okay.
Rather than what it was. And of course,
I guess it depends on how you define those basic needs and then what you provide for your students. Yeah. I mean, we already have a lot of trouble getting students quality food, and we have children who come from families who don't even have money to give them lunches.
Right. Yeah.
So if we're giving them, food quality that's lower than that at our federal prisons and expecting our children to flourish, I guess that's a reevaluation of those basic needs.
Well, you're not the only person criticizing Mrs. DeVos. The president of the Union of American, the Union of American Federation for Teachers, which the union is the American Federation for Teachers, Randy Weingarten, he says that she's a billionaire with an agenda. That she wants to reignite the education wars. That's the terms that he's using.
Yes, yeah. I was actually doing a little bit of reading on that right now. She's been called the most anti-public education figure ever. Which is quite a large statement. I feel like her lobbying against the teachers unions is an interesting topic, in that people's opinions on teachers unions is quite varied and typically a very strong opinion. I know a lot of people who are strongly opposed to the idea of having a teachers union in the first place.
Well, there are a lot of people that are opposed to just unions.
Right.
They don't like the idea of a union.
Right. And then the compounded fact of people who don't like unions who see a union controlling the education of our children.
Right.
So that's, I mean, I don't like the idea of unions. I feel like in our modern society, they don't have a whole lot of purpose anymore. I won't say that they're totally useless, but I don't feel there's a lot of purpose to them anymore.
Well, I'm, you know, back when there were problems with labor law, I can see the reason for it. And I think that labor should, I mean, I don't think that they should be eliminated from organizing.
No, I don't think
they should be outlawed by any means. Yeah, but I think that some of the unionization can maybe be, you know, there's a lot of regulation on them, and it does drive costs up in other industries, not education, but in other
right.
industries. And you are made to feel that you are not part of the group if you are not part of the union, you know, because you know you're not protected by the union, which unfortunately the contract is negotiated for all
right.
of the employees, regardless if they belong to the union or not,
or their merit,
yeah, or the merit of the union, yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting. So if we have someone that's basically saying that she's a very partisan individual that wants to remove public education.
Right.
Why is she being appointed to the highest seat on education in the land?
Well, you have Trump's idea, I guess, of massive reform and draining the swamp. That's his go-to catchphrase.
Right.
But what's funny about that, that you bring up the fact that she's even involved in this, is if you're looking at the idea of new ideas and reform and changing the government and removing the corruption within it, she comes from a family that has been so involved in politics and lobbying that since the 70s, it's been claimed that there's not a Republican presidential candidate in the last 50 years that hasn't been involved with her family. Now, that's a quote from a Michigan Republican Party member.
So you could say that it's a thank you.
Oh, interesting.
For assisting him in gaining the voters in that state.
Right, right. I mean, which was one of the swing states that he won the election in.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, he got electoral votes there, and that helped him to push over the top.
See, I was told that Trump wasn't a typical politician.
No. But he hired typical politicians in order to make him get elected. So President-elect Trump is currently putting her forward, and she basically is aggressively targeting
the funding yeah.
for education. That's her idea. So how can we make a positive change? One of the things here at the One Man Revolution podcast is what we're always looking for are positive ways to change things. Right now, the only way that you can change who's being appointed to these cabinet positions is to talk to the senators that are on these confirmation committees.
Right.
So what you'll need to do is write your senators, congressmen, everyone who's out there.
I've heard that it's far more effective to make phone calls.
It is.
If you take your time to go out of your day and call their phone banks,
yeah.
overwhelm them, because emails can be ignored, letters can be put in a pile, but they have to answer phone calls. And if they're sitting 20 calls deep in queue and there's only five yeah. people answering, well, they notice that.
And did you know they still use traditional phone lines? So
they have to pay for the line.
So that's not the it's not the payment. Uh-huh. It's that when it's engaged,
uh-huh.
they can't make phone calls out.
Oh, well, there you go.
So once all their phone lines are full, they can't make phone calls out.
They cease being a productive office.
See, right.
Yeah. So they notice the phone calls. If you can get a hold of your congressman, senator, get their phone call, their phone number, give them a call. Let them know what you think about these appointments here.
And the easiest way to get those phone numbers, and we'll put it in the show notes that are going to go up on onemanrevolution.org, is to basically it's the Congress and the Senate. So it's senate.gov, congress.gov, and all their phone numbers are there. And there's plenty of other organizations out there. You know, if you just go into the Google and type in look up senators' phone numbers. Senator, there you go. And they hit it.
Yeah.
And it'll immediately give you the U.S. Senate right there. It says contact your senator, boxer.senator.gov. It has the ability to do it.
Literally the second link in Google.
It's the second link in Google is how to get a hold of them. And then, of course, there's Open Congress down below, which you can even look up your individual state and local ones, which we both agree
yes.
is the most important thing that we do. Work locally and go up from there. But right now with these confirmation hearings, what we really want to do is get involved with the state senators.
The direct congressman. I realize that it's a little bit more difficult because the time of the day that they're doing these hearings and the fact that they're stacking multiple hearings at the same time to make it basically impossible for the average American to understand what is happening and get proper coverage for it.
And that's why they put four of them, I think.
You know, all at once.
Yeah. So yeah, I would agree. It does sound like it is. And it's funny, we even have people from the Great White North chiming in. It says, so, kickbacks from the good old boys club. It's like, yeah, it looks like it is the good old boys club.
Yeah, I mean, this time it's the Republican good old boys club instead of the DNC, but either way.
Regardless of party, and I think that's one thing that we also can get behind, absolutely, the two of us, is it doesn't matter about party. I mean, I hold membership to a party just so I can vote in the primaries. That's the reason why.
It's interesting you say that, because I was raised in basically a Republican household. Like, we called ourselves Republican, not conservative, Republican. Mm-hmm. And then as King Bush's reign continued on, things started to kind of sour, and I registered as an independent when I first registered to vote, only to realize that I had no voice in the primary. So
yeah.
I had to pick a party for this last primary.
Well,
but I had no loyalty to any particular party. I just liked specific candidates.
Well, we could devolve into that a little bit for just a moment.
Of course.
There is a movement afoot to open up primaries.
Oh, excellent. I hadn't heard about this.
And there is an open primary. I think it's open primary or openprimaries.org. There it is, openprimaries.org. It's an organization that's trying to open up all of the voters and allowing everyone to vote in every election.
Excellent.
Non-partisan primaries. But here's the reason why the parties don't want it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why all the parties do not want to have non-partisan primary elections in the United States or elsewhere. I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at the primary system around most governments that have multiple party systems, the primaries are for them to select their individual candidate.
Well, if you make it a nonpartisan process, all the gerrymandering that's been going on for generations is completely annihilated. They have no control over their district, which means their local political leverage is totally removed.
Yeah, so basically, if you look at the number of people, 43% of Americans identify themselves as politically independent. And from the website, and this is openprimaries.org, and I looked through this a little while ago, earlier in the week when I heard it on Keith and the Girls podcast. They had someone on from here, and they said that 50% of millennials identify themselves as independent.
Well, I mean, we've all grown up basically seeing both parties be completely non-representative of any of our values.
Right.
And be totally inconsistent in maintaining any aspect of value that they claim to have.
Yeah.
As I stated, I grew up in a Republican household, and I don't think the Republicans have an identity as a party, much less follow any specific values. I mean, I guess the one thing you can say they all come behind is the issue of abortion, which I don't want to touch today. That's way outside of the realm of what we wanted to talk about today.
No, that's way outside. We'll get there eventually.
But not tonight.
Not today.
Do we want to maybe come back to the cabinet hearing?
Yeah, let's come back to the cabinet. I just want to touch on that because I think a lot of what this did in this whole idea of the entire process has flaws in it, and what we want to do is we want to bring attention.
Right.
Whenever we see a problem within the system, we want to turn it back around and say, look, we can solve this problem in the next 2 years.
Right.
Yeah, or the 2 years after that. It's a two-year process because of the way that our Congress is elected. Okay, half of it is up every 2 years. So,
which I think is a good thing. I feel like too quickly people get ahead of themselves and stop looking deeply enough into issues.
Yeah.
And it's like we said earlier, it starts on the local level. Find out who your local representatives are. Do your research. Make some phone calls. Go to their office if you have the time. They might even be there to talk to you about it.
Yeah. And if you're in Washington, feel free to stop by and
wave a sign outside.
Wave a sign outside. And if you put One Man Revolution podcast on there, I'll send you a beer. It's always a good idea.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, stick it on the sign.
Yeah, we'll put a beer fund together for anybody who wants to throw the name.
If anyone's in Washington D.C. in the sound of my voice, and they would like to go to President Deflect Trump's inauguration and wave a sign that has One Man Revolution podcast on it or onemanrevolution.org on it, I will definitely buy you a beer next time I see you.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. At least a beer. All right.
Okay.
So we were talking about that. Oh, yeah. So back to DeVos. So she definitely looks like it's not a good thing. So maybe you want to contact and say, look, this person, I don't know if they're the best person for the job. Because they've dealt with organizations, but they seem to have a very, very definite agenda against toward the privatization of schools.
Right.
And being someone that, you know, that has worked within a state and university system, being one who's worked in the private educational system also, I've worked on both sides of the fence. I can see the problems if we just went privatized.
Well, yeah, I don't see how that could possibly work well in terms of, regardless of your opinion on the matter, the government must be involved in some way with our with the education of children.
Yeah.
There's no way they can be funded without tax money, which means the government has to be involved. So, privatization, I'm all for the choice and having children be educated in the style and manner that is best for their learning style.
Correct.
But there has to be some level of accountability, I suppose, for those schools.
Well, responsibility and accountability have always been things, and we've been trying to change the way education works for many, many years. The outgoing president, did many inroads in changing the way that education was going to be delivered. They definitely tried to modernize. They definitely tried to make big changes, and they were blockaded all the way through.
Well, so, yeah, it's been a giant stalemate.
It's been a stalemate. There's been, again, like I said last podcast, it's been a very unproductive Congress.
I believe historically the least effective.
One of the least effective.
But yes. Another. Speaking of effective.
And you're right. A lot of those private schools will take your dreams. Seriously. Correct.
It's those rulers.
It is.
So somebody else that I've had my eye on since his name was mentioned is the Secretary of State appointee, Rex Tillerson.
Ooh, Rex! Another one of those people that has a great name.
He's got a wonderful... Honestly, if nothing else, Secretary of State Rex sounds fantastic. But he's interesting because I feel like there's legitimate aspects of his appointment that have supporting qualities. Like, he's been so involved with various aspects of doing deals with countries under sanction or about to be under sanction, dealing with dictators, that he might actually have some level of foreign policy experience.
But on the other side of that,
right,
his foreign policy experiences with Exxon.
Right.
As a person who is negotiating to get pipelines put in places.
Right.
And the biggest stopping point for Tillerson's pipelines was the executive branch of this administration.
The Obama administration has been wonderful about maintaining that level of check and balance.
Mm-hmm. It didn't help our friends to the north, so I know my friends up in Edmonton. I know you're definitely feeling the sting of our energy policy, and I know you guys want us to open up and make things happen with different pipelines and whatnot. And I really, you know, I feel for you, but I don't know if we want to open them up to the former Soviet Union.
Former?
Well, you got a point there. You got a point there.
My bringing that up, one of my biggest concerns is he has remarkably close ties with Russia through Exxon. He negotiated one of the largest oil discovery deals in the Atlantic ever, which were stymied by European and American sanctions against Russia in 2014. But to be fair, those concerns notwithstanding, he did actually sell all of his holdings with Exxon. He no longer has any assets tied into Exxon directly. Now, if he has indirect connections, I haven't done enough research into that, but he no longer has any direct profits to be made from Exxon's dealings directly.
Right. Okay.
Which is a little bit better than our president-elect has done with his assets, but we'll get there. His interactions with Putin scare me, especially considering all of the concerns that we had recently with Russian involvement in our politics, their alleged influence campaign with our election, and then now new allegations that they might or might not have some level of blackmail against Trump. Scary things, considering that the potential Secretary of State has been given the Medal of the Order of Friendship by Putin back in 2013. So I feel like they're kind of buddy-buddy over there, and that feeds into the concerns that we have regarding fairness and maintaining American interests internationally. Oh, boy.
So you're saying that Putin has connections to Tillerson? That they're good friends?
They might be. I mean, they even
commemorated that medal. A medal. So during some ceremony where the music swelled, it might have been a little... I mean, these things, I'm sure, I mean, maybe it was just a metal post on his chest, but I always think, I mean, it's just, I mean, that Russian slap is just so strong. It's one part. So,
I had to do that too.
That was amazing.
Always have things on bank so you can find them. It's important for us to know that, yes, Tillerson has gotten the Medal of Friendship. Tillerson has ties with Exxon through Russia. If he becomes the Secretary of State, he can get the signature from the president-deflect right now, right? President-deflect Trump, because he currently, let's just say, he currently would be very happy to make his good friend Vladimir, who...
find a lot of money.
Yeah, make him a lot of money. Also, give him a lot of power, because the more oil that flows through the black veins of Europe, the more money they can get, because the entire Russian economy is based on, the currency is based on oil,
right. Well, it's interesting you say that, though, because if Russia were to be able to take advantage of the technologies that we possess to drill and mine in Siberia for those massive resources...
Well, it wouldn't be very bad for our friends up north and here in Canada. But
that'd be terrible.
It'd be terrible for our allies.
Would that also not devalue oil even more so than it already is? I mean, I'm not an economist. But
no, I'm not an economist, nor do I play one on TV. I'm a guy who cracked a microphone and has a podcast.
Right.
Yeah, I mean...
It's a very complicated thing. I think there's a lot of concerns there regarding fair play and interaction. I mean, I would love, with our friends to the north, I would love to see better trade deals regarding oil and other various energy resources between the two of us.
Right.
Pipeline issues are always a huge concern, as you can see with the protests over this past few months. They did manage to prevent that installation, but... Yeah. It's not done, it's just on hold.
Well, would you rather deal with Vladimir Putin or the Saudis?
You know, that's a hard question. Well,
it's a Faustian bargain.
Eventually, if Putin has his way, he'll just control all of Saudi Arabia as well.
Yeah.
And most of what we now call the Middle East will have the Soviet Empire back.
Well, the thing is, I mean, a lot of people have pointed this out, that the Soviet Union... as it was, and now under Vladimir Putin, the former head of the FSB, it was?
I believe so.
I think it was, or the KGB.
The FSB.
FSB, yeah. FSB, yeah. So he was, you know, so he has that power, but, you know, the Saudi government, you know, with all their human rights violations and all of their problems, you know, is it the devil we know? But we've been supporting the Saudis for years and years and years.
Right.
We really have. I mean, honestly.
That's a rabbit hole, I don't... feel like getting into. speaking of Russia and
well, there is a lot going on with Russia right now. I mean, there was that whole released security commission's release about
there was a
Russia.
Briefing, yeah, a briefing. There was a briefing released regarding potential holdings of blackmail and I don't know how the terminology they used for that, but compromising material.
Compromising material was the term that they used, yeah.
Of Trump and his misdealings while he was over in Russia for the Miss Universe pageant.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been corroborated, so I'm loathe to even repeat what they say without that evidence, but it seems that the source of the material is somewhat legit. He's got a history with various intelligence agencies. Trump's interaction with the intelligence agencies also makes things interesting because he's not exactly positive in his interactions with them. So that's so up in the air. It's definitely a concern. I think Russia's Trump's interaction with Russia, I know he has real estate holdings over there.
Right.
He's allowed a lot of business ties in Russia that if Russia's economy were to become better all of a sudden with, you know, lift with maybe some sanctions,
right,
there would be conflicts of interest. So I feel like it's just this giant spider web of ties that Russia has to Trump specifically.
Well, but the president deflect has said over and over and over again that he is not going to utilize any of these ties. He has no ties any longer. He signed it all over to his sons.
His sons, plural.
I mean, at his press conference, he had a whole table full of paper that he said were all of the documents that he had been vigorously signing to turn over control to his sons.
Forgive me. He's the president-elect, correct?
Correct.
And they have how much legislative power?
None.
Oh, okay. So he's been really hard to work then.
Yeah, it's been hard to work. Well, but this isn't legislation. This is his own companies.
Oh, yeah.
He was signing away his control and his rights to his companies.
But he's not, because he's already claimed that he's going to...
Yeah, he's going to turn over. He's going to abdicate.
He's going to donate, I apologize.
Donate.
He's going to donate the profits from his real estate holdings directly to the Department of Treasury, which tells me that he's not separate from the company. Like, he's not actually removed himself from the operations of his companies.
Come on, man. Of course he is. Absolutely. He's got to be.
I saw a wonderful little soundbite earlier today on Reddit that basically said, you can expect Trump to be impeached within 18 months.
Yeah, it's now at 50-50. It used to be 17-1 odds against him being impeached.
Now it's 50-50.
Now it's a 50-50 shot, and people in Vegas won't take the bets anymore because it was 17-1. You could take a bet at 17-1 and make some money on it, right? Because the odds are in very good favor that you won't win. That's the idea behind it. So it favors the House. But at 50-50, that's a coin flip.
Oh, yeah. There's no profit there.
So if you just look up here, it says, reporters weren't allowed to examine stacks of files at the press conference by Donald Trump. And this is on Snopes. I always like to look things up on Snopes. It says it's unproven. But there are pictures of his stacks of folders and files. And if you look closely, they look very, very clean and very, very new.
It looks like Office Depot just had a really good day.
And it really does. And if you look at if you go on Snopes, there's a CNN Politics put one out. They won't let the press touch any of it, which to me again is a big problem. That's my problem.
The lack of transparency.
Lack of transparency drives me crazy. Again, it's no responsibility. It's not claiming any responsibility for anything that's going on.
I mean, nearly 6 months between press conferences.
Yeah.
Is atrocious.
Yeah. So if you look at one of the pictures that CNN Politics put out, it really looks like those are just blank pieces of copy paper that were thrown in there. If they did have something on them, you might see some discoloration if they went through a printer.
Well, I mean, something. You see some smudgy little fingerprints, maybe.
Something.
Yeah.
And the fronts of the file folders would have some type of fingerprints on it. So again, to me, that's another misstep that happened. I know that during this past week,
he got really comfortable blustering his way through the entire campaign. Back when you can make unfounded promises and statements, and it's okay because there's no real expectation of you to follow through with them.
Right.
And now he's seeing that aspect of, no, you actually have to do a job.
Yeah, that might be the problem.
And he's continuing to try to bluster his way through that, and that's kind of a terrifying thing. Like, he's not even putting forth a face of somebody who might be presidential or even executive level of a company.
Right.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine a company being successfully run by somebody who doesn't really make any promises or follow through with any real action.
Well, but that happens all the time.
Maybe going bankrupt?
They do go bankrupt, but only six or so of them.
There's just so much going on. It's hard to keep it all focused, honestly.
Yeah.
Another fun one, he's really pushing the boundaries of the limitations of the nepotism laws in the government. He's appointed his son-in-law to be a chief senior White House aide, which he has argued
right.
that not being a member of the actual federal process is not illegal. And it's super, super sketchy.
It's very sketchy.
But,
and this would be one of the reasons why the House Republicans tried to stop the ethics committees.
To be fair, there is precedent for this. The Clintons, back when Bill Clinton appointed Hillary,
right,
to spearhead the healthcare reform efforts, they created a precedent that might allow Trump to get away with this particular appointment because he's not actually sitting in a committee or in Congress or anything.
Right.
I've heard that he was very involved. His son-in-law was very involved in the campaign, and he served to be something of a calming factor.
Right, right.
Trump, which might actually be good.
That would be a good thing if we had someone who would keep him calm. I mean, his current wife, is she planning to stay in the White House is a good question. And that would be another calming influence if either of them were to stay at the White House. It's still not his daughter. Not his daughter. Let's not go there yet. I mean, we'll bring that up after. But it's still speculation of whether or not he's going to
live in the White House.
Live in the White House.
Isn't it by law?
It is by precedent. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that the president, just because of security issues, yes, right, lived there. We could look that up, and if someone wants to send that in there. Russ, I'm not ignoring you. You're coming in from Japan. I know you are coming in from Japan. And yes, I do understand that the greatest things that created world peace was that we have friendly relations with Russia. Okay, and I totally understand that. We're not saying that we shouldn't be friendly toward Russia. We just shouldn't have business dealings with them as the leader of the free world.
Well, Russ raises interesting points, and I don't disagree. As you mentioned earlier, Saudi Arabia and its myriad humanitarian sins.
Yeah.
Of which Russia is not innocent. I mean, look at, was it Pussy Riot?
Yeah.
They were in prison for exercising what they don't have as a right of free speech.
Well, there is no right of free speech.
There is no free speech, but they were in prison really for voicing their opinions.
Correct.
So I guess it's half a dozen of one, six of the other, and there is no lesser of two evils. I guess you just pick whichever one is more beneficial economically. But then somebody sees you as the devil.
Well, that's true. And isn't there's an entire process where you're seen as the argument is always ended by seeing someone as Hitler. That's the first one.
Yes.
Or you're the devil, or you're the person that benefits from it.
Right.
There's always one of those arguments always falls in here, and you know we're not going to do that here.
No.
We're just going to put things out, and we're going to say we're going to move forward, right?
Well, we're not in a place to impose sanctions and/or legislation. So, I love suggestions. Any ideas behind positive changes that we can partake in here?
That'd be great.
I mean, Ross, like you said, scientific interaction between the two of us, especially on the ISS, is incredible. Yeah. The Russians keep it flying, and we keep sending stuff up there. So,
yeah, I agree. Yes, I know. Yes, I'm going to love this feedback system eventually.
No, once we figure this out, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, we're
going
to get to all of the. We'll get to that later. We'll have a whole show on Saudi Arabia for you, Russ.
Oh, there we go.
I mean, I can tell you right now, I'm still a firm believer. You know, in what had happened in 2001 on a day in September. You know, when you look at the number of people that were on the planes and where their nationality was from. That we do need to have a discussion about Saudi Arabia. Unfortunately, the seated king at the time decided that that wasn't something he wanted to get into because of oil. It was much easier to fight a fight that his daddy had fought. So we'll get around that. We'll get back over there. I mean, I don't want to have to put my tinfoil hat on, and I know that the comrade doesn't want to do that either. Okay, so we'll get back around to it. And we'll come back to some of the other folks that are there. So we've definitely talked about some of the things we have there. We should probably end with going to Twitter and just reading Trump tweets.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that would be a good way of doing each and every one of our shows. Because we're coming up on like around 40 minutes. And I always say that I like to keep my podcast around 40 minutes.
We did forget to do the fact checking.
Oh, yeah. We did have a whole thing of fact checking.
Yes.
I did say that we were going to do this. And I think we should definitely go back.
That's a good way to end.
That'd be a good way to end that. Yeah, yeah.
So back and forth?
So going around Facebook, absolutely. Yeah. Going around Facebook, there was a Facebook post that said, "The Federal Week in Review." And it said, number one, Trump fires all ambassadors and special envoys, all ordering them out by Inauguration Day. Well, here's the thing. Anyone who is appointed by a current seated president upon the inauguration of a new president tenders their resignation. That's been traditionally what happens. They know that their job is over because they were appointed by the preceding administration. So upon inauguration, Trump can raise his tin sword and wave it in the air and say, "All you people have to leave," but he's chasing their backs because they were already leaving.
Yeah, they're probably running screaming through that door.
Most likely. Although, if anybody would like to find a way for me to become the ambassador to Iceland, I'm all for it. I will live in Iceland for the next 4 years as the ambassador to Iceland. So if someone wants to get on that one, we're good. So the second one was?
The second one's really fun. The House has brought back something called the Holman Rule. The Holman Rule gives the House the ability to reduce any civil service appointee's salary down to $1. They have to pay them and they can't fire them, but they make their salary $1. And they can do this with any piece of legislation. So basically what this means is they have the ability to write a law and in that law have a single line item that this person or this agency has zero funding now. It's another indirect way in which the House Republicans are trying to control oversight and basically ethical controls in Congress.
Yeah.
The theory is that they're specifically trying to target the Department of Energy and the EPA.
And the EPA, yeah. Which are two places that they do not want to have around anymore.
Right.
That's been a longstanding, part of the platform, that they want to remove the Department of Energy because it holds people back, holds business back, and same thing with the EPA.
Right.
You know, clean water and clean air.
And the new fuel efficiency.
And fuel efficiency standards, which is going to cost us a lot of money. We'll talk about that next time. That's another one. All right. So that's definitely been something that's been there. And again, that was... You know, that was definitely
that's verified.
That's there. And if I reduced your salary to $1, you would probably look for other employment.
That's usually the result.
So that would be a thing that they do. Number three on that list, the Senate schedules 6 simultaneous hearings on cabinet appointees and triple books those hearings with Trump's first press conference in months, effectively preventing the concentrated coverage or protest. Well, that's true.
We're seeing it happen
today. We saw it happen today. We saw it happen Wednesday. We saw it happen yesterday. It happened every day this week. So that's a great scheme to make sure that you can't cover everything, so that you can't attend everything, and so that you do not have any transparency in your government.
Another layer on top of that as well is the processes were not followed according to the intent of the actual proceeding.
It's
supposed to be a full background check, a vetting. Questionnaires supposed to be submitted to the committee prior to the interviews, and they were given like 2 days to do all of this, so we haven't even followed the proper vetting procedures.
Right. And also another thing that this does do for us, if we look at having all of these, from the perspective of someone who supports this, it could be very much looked at as efficient.
Oh, it's very, almost business-like.
It's very business-like and very efficient to do all of them this way.
Yes.
And it's overly efficient. It's almost dictatorial in
interesting
manner.
Fascist and all?
Fascist, yeah. Almost, I would say. But I'm not going to call him a fascist. I'll just say it seems fascist. That's like, I'm not going to call you a dick, but I'm going to say that you're doing dickly things. Okay?
You got to watch out for that.
I know, you do have to watch out for that.
So number four on this list. The House GOP expressly forbids the Congressional Budget Office from reporting or tracking any costs related to the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. Mostly true. The Washington Examiner did a little bit of looking into it. It seems that the House passed rules for the 115th Congress, which includes a measure to prevent the Congressional Budget Office from reviewing whether or not the repeal of the Affordable Care Act would increase public spending.
Yeah.
So it's just adding another veil between what they're doing in a congressional majority and us from keeping track of it. So that's a huge concern of mine. I mean, for me, one of my biggest personal philosophies is the government needs to spend less money.
Yeah.
And the Republicans have always been the ones to quote-unquote be the financially conservative party, which has never really been true.
Well, the financially conservative party, if you want to look at it this way, is that they would put forward legislation without funding it. And that way, if it failed, it was because they couldn't get funding for it, but they fought so that there were no taxes that were funding it.
Of course.
So therefore, course. By not doing it, so they were always fulfilling their campaign promises.
Right.
Which is bad for
So that's a big concern.
All right, let's see. Number five. Trump continues to throw the intelligence community under the bus to protect Putin, despite the growing mountain of evidence that the Russians deliberately interfered with our election. Well, there's a lot of truth and half-truth and interpretation to this. Politico, Trump labeled the new findings a political witch hunt. He also called CNN
fake news
for reporting it. The other day, Golden Shower was trending.
Oh boy.
As a hashtag. And you know, all those folks that have trouble with two men holding hands or two women kissing in public are going to have to explain to their children what a golden shower is. So
it's when the pipes are kind of rusty.
Is that what it is? I thought it was when Scrooge McDuck took a dive in his money bin.
Oh,
that's what I always thought it was. It's not that. All right. So, but it's political witch hunt. But he also stated in the exact same breath during the press conference that we got so much great things out of that hacking.
Oh yeah.
That we got so many good things that were important. One of my for people to know.
And one of my personal favorite highlights of the campaign itself was, Russia should have the DNC. That'd be good for everybody. You know.
No. All right, number six.
Number six. Donald Trump breaks a central campaign promise to make Mexico pay for the wall by asking Congress to pay for it. This is also basically true. My favorite thing here, I'm going to quote a Trump from Donald Trump, tweet rather.
Oh my God, tweets have now become Trumps.
I'm going to quote a tweet from Donald Trump. Mexico will pay a little bit later so it can be built more quickly. Basically saying he's going to foot the bill on our tax dollars and then hope that through trade we'll make the money back through Mexico. But he's also preventing, oh, so we'll get to that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so basically we're paying for the wall.
Yeah. Yep. They'll build it. No, we'll build it.
We'll build it.
We'll pay for it. And then we'll ask someone else for it later.
And they'll laugh at us while they fly over it.
So my whole thing with that is when was the last time we got a foreign government to pay for something that we built for ourselves? Exactly. All right, so number seven. Trump threatens Toyota over a new plant that was never coming to the U.S. nor will take jobs out of the U.S. Well, Trump tweeted that major Toyota Motors said it will build a new plant in Baja, Mexico to build Corolla cars for the U.S. No way. Build a plant in the U.S. or pay big border taxes. Issue is Baja plant already exists, and there is a new plant in... What is that one?
Guanajuato,
which broke ground in November, and that's from Reuters. Reuters is always a good choice because very everyone quotes them. I mean, they actually have reporters. So that goes like the Ford one did.
Yeah,
you know, 6 months after eleven months after Ford said they weren't moving. Some news source said that Trump stopped them from moving their plant.
No, that was Trump's own spin.
Right, Trump's own spin on it.
So the news broke, and then Trump. Yeah. Who is apparently very good at following news trends and then tweeting about them, but not actually doing anything.
Right.
Trump made something along the lines of, like, it's finally happening, Ford's reinvesting in Detroit instead of opening a new plant, which is not true.
No.
Ford already had plans to do these things.
Right, right.
I believe the CEO of Ford did an interview on NPR the other day and basically said the same thing.
Yeah.
We make economic decisions. We don't care about the politics of
it. Right, right, right. Oh, man. So, not true? He again brandished that beautiful tin saber.
Yeah,
at the backs of the people as they walked away.
Right.
They didn't even see it. And I think that's going to be a trend during this entire administration.
Just wants to spin.
He's going to rattle and rattle and rattle, and then things are going to happen.
And he's going to claim credit.
And he's going to claim credit for it. And that's fine.
They'll do it in 140 characters or less.
Correct. Because that's how we're going to get news. Just like the news branches get, we're going to get it directly from Twitter.
Right. Yeah. So I think that issue and this next one are both really big indicators.
This is the big one.
How spin affects an issue.
Yeah.
So number eight, the House passes the RAINS Act, which gives them veto power over any rules enacted by a federal agency or department, such as the FDA or the EPA banning a drug or a pesticide. Basically, Congress can now overrule these new rules or laws based on the lobbying and the mechanics of Congress itself, and ignoring the focused aspects of the committee put together to create these rules and laws. I did a lot of research, I did a lot of reading, and this one's tough because it basically, whoever you read it from tells you how to think about it. They don't tell you what it means, because I don't think anybody really understands what it means. You can argue that it's better in that you'll have less frivolous rules and acts taking federal money and applying it towards something that you don't care about.
And creating more efficiencies. Isn't that the idea? Trying to create a more efficient government by not allowing the rule of law to take too long to occur.
I would say that's a fair argument, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it being, let's say you have a committee of people who are at least informed by experts on a certain topic, they come to a conclusion. They work a lot of time. They come to this really wonderful new rule that helps the federal government address a very specific issue. And it's laid bare to Congress and all of its horrible ineptitudes and corruption. Lobbying is one of those topics that really gets under my skin. And when you say that we have these, like, let's say the FDA has a drug that they've approved, but Congress doesn't want to let that go through because one of the lobbyists is a competitor to that new product. Now we have progress being impeded by this new law. So, granted, it's just in the House. It's not yet a mechanic for all of Congress. So we come back to positive change. Get in touch with your representatives. Let them know that you either want, preferably, you don't want this passed. We need better, more specific laws. Make your voice be heard. This is something that's super, super powerful. It can be really easily misused. So this one scares me, and I'm a fan of just not passing laws unless we know for a fact that they are helpful.
I completely and totally agree. Oh, like I said, I'm going to end with truly Trump tweets. So what we just did is what we'll do is we'll take that chunk of information, and there's Nolan did a we did a great amount.
The comrade did a lot of research.
Yeah, there's a lot of research, comrade, in there. Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of things in there, and we'll throw that in there, the research department, so that folks can see it. We'll put it up on the web, so that everyone can check the links themselves and make your own opinions. And if you have a differing opinion, hey, let us know.
We'll probably shout it out there.
Yeah, we'll shout it out there for you if you give us a better one, right? So let's end with, let's see where we're at in time here. Let's see, we are at, oh good, only 10 minutes over. That's not bad.
That's not terrible.
That's not terrible. It only took us 10 minutes to do that. So let's see, so his current 9 hours ago, let's see, let's go 16 hours ago because he's got in bold letters, the Unaffordable Care Act will soon be history.
So that's good. Yeah. All of you who are under the age of 27 who are relying on your parents for health care, yeah, good luck.
Yeah. So my favorite one on that is did you see the post going around on Facebook that had the person saying, I'm so glad Obamacare has been repealed?
Oh.
Because
But he was relying on the Affordable Care
but
Act.
But he was relying on the Affordable Care Act because he had a pre-existing condition that would not allow him to get insurance until that. Yeah. So all of the folks that are involved with that who are yelling from the tops of the trees not realizing that Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act are the same.
Ignorance is a tool they use to control us. Inform yourselves. Fight back.
And one man can make a difference. And one man can make a revolution. And on that, I'll just say, I'm the revolutionary.
I'm the comrade.
And you all have a great day.